Hi, welcome to Holistic Matters Podcast. I'm John Trope, your host, and it's the podcast designed to help you become the you that nature intended. We're at the Integrated Healthcare Symposium with Dr. Chris Bump. It's the 2019 show, and we're always excited to be at this show to run into practitioners and leading thought leaders and check with them and see what they think is going to be interesting here this week or what they're already learning and focus on. Chris, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome, John. It's always a pleasure.
It's always great being in New York City, kind of close to or, in fact, your home, broader metro area.
Yeah, it took me a little two-hour commute to get here today.
Ah, okay. Because of traffic or because of distance?
Well, bus, yeah.
Oh, the bus, yeah.
Bus,
yeah.
Right.
Well, thank God for America's mass transportation capabilities. So, anyway, here we are at IHS. It's one of probably, what do you think, five major educational forum and trade shows for our broader industry of nutrition and healthcare and integrated medicine, obviously.
Yeah.
So you've probably been coming to the show for a long time.
Oh, probably since its inception.
Yeah?
Yeah, and I can't even tell you how long ago. Well, whenever the first one was.
Yeah, awesome. So what are you seeing these days as major trends? And always in these meetings, it is clear, though, that nutrition is part of that trend.
Yes.
It just gets teased out year after year on very specific targeted issues of concern and patient management. But where's nutrition being discussed more so now, both in the broader healthcare view, but also in the chiropractic specific and integrated medicine worlds?
Wow. That's a loaded question, John, as usual. So there's a couple things. There's both the kind of the microcosmic that we could focus on, where there's this a lot of work being investigated where nutrition is influencing epigenetics and genetics. So there's a push and move towards what I call reductionism in nutrition, where you can take genetics and run them through a software and see how they're interfacing with nutrient needs. That's an interesting and I think relevant arena. It's kind of in its infancy yet.
So that's kind of a personalized nutrition.
It's very
personalized. Medicine concept, yeah.
Yeah, so someone comes in, they had their 23andMe raw data, you run it through a software, and you can assess whether they need methylated forms of Bs or a certain level of minerals per chance or certain fat solubles, depending on the genetics. Personally, I use the word reductionism because, you know, when the arena of epigenetics first became clarified, we were speaking about how environment is the primary push for epigenetics, right? And so air pollutants, toxicants, thought patterns, nutrient levels, or nutrient deficiencies, all are influencing the enzymatic and cellular communication. So if you think of the kinase tree and how it influences the epigenetics. So that's huge. But what we learned is that it's a dynamic process. So meaning that as you change your lifestyle, your genes are going to express differently. The analogy that I kind of use, John, in this is that your genes are sitting there in the nuclear envelope waiting to be told what to do.
Right.
They're not just going to turn on, I mean, to a certain percentage they do, but really they're waiting for the signals to be told what to do. And that's how environment influences. So I'm a little suspicious about that arena right now in terms of looking at this real personalized genetic nutrition. I think there's a place for it. I just don't think it's refined yet. So that's one area. The other is a kind of a more global perspective, and it has to do with the nutrient density of the foods that we're eating.
Right.
Huge. And this is where, you know, when you're thinking about nutrients that we're taking in concentrated forms, say tablets or capsules, looking at the source of them is critically important. I mean, just like we know that organic foods have a different nutrient density than commercial ones, and grass-fed beef has a different fatty acid constituent than commercial-fed beef, we want to be sensitive to that or be knowledgeable of it as clinicians in terms of what we're recommending to patients and why. So those are two broader, you know, they're kind of at the opposite ends right. of the spectrum.
Right. But it's connected. I mean, we know from epidemiological studies and even specific clinical studies is that nutrient profile of whole foods particularly can influence genetic expression. And quickly even. Even as fast as 30 minutes after consuming a nutrient-dense product and longer.
So. You've done a lot of research on microRNAs, and that's the perfect example where you're going to see nutrient influence on right at the transcription level.
So, you know, in the particularly in the chiropractic arena and in integrative medicine, there are really, I think, two broad issues where the chiropractic physician has a lot to offer, and they do. One is kind of general health and wellness with better nutrition and lifestyle balance. And then the other is the specific chiropractic treatment modalities. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, my own observation, right or wrong, and that's part of my question here, is the two don't necessarily connect. But they do. So in my view, I've become a firm believer in that the traditional chiropractic treatment modalities are clearly influenced by selected nutrients at the very least to help enhance and support the patient's response to the treatment modality. But could you comment on hey, it's a very real connection. They're not two separate platforms. They really should be connected.
So,
and then as part of that, if you would, is how do we convince a greater active integrated use of nutrition in chiropractic care from the very start of patient presentation?
So how much time do we have, John?
Take as much time as you need.
So I think it's an important topic. You just touched on that question. The absolute essence of what chiropractic, in my opinion, needs to do where it is. Now, so first off, chiropractic as a profession would not have survived 120 years if it wasn't efficacious.
Absolutely.
So it absolutely has a benefit. Now, as a clinician who likes to look at the dot connection of why things work, how they work, I am forever looking at scientific, in quotation marks, explanations of how chiropractic and why chiropractic works. Guess what I find? Zip, zero, nothing.
Really?
I cannot find any clear scientific evidence of why it works or what it does. So I will stand up on stage in front of the largest audiences and state that. Show me that. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't work. We know that it works. But I don't think the profession, chiropractic profession, has been looking under the right stone, so to speak. Mm. The whole concept of neurologic impingement and subluxation is an antiquated concept. Unless you take the concept of subluxation, and this is just bump speaking, and apply it right down to the genetics, bring it out to the cellular matrix, intracellular matrix, right, the cellular envelope, the extracellular matrix, out into the whole being, right, if you take the concept of subluxation as an example and say, what if the nuclear envelope has a subluxation? Right. What would it look like? It would look like a nutrient deficiency.
Right.
So the actual membrane may suffer because of the improper ratio of essential fat, as example, right? And so you can take that concept and apply it to the cellular membrane. You can apply it to any soft tissue. You can apply it to any organ or gland. So using that concept, it's kind of simplistic. You can say, well, so this whole spinal misalignment or spinal balancing is influenced by the soft tissue. We know that.
Right. So are you describing really this concept of taking a very practical clinical observation, say subluxation, and then trying to describe what affects subluxation, which is an underlying system that may be rooted in an underlying metabolic process or biochemical process, but there's a system that influences, or some patients are predisposed to have problems with subluxation, and so if you can identify the underlying cause of that subluxation or problems, then it's easier to identify what a co-therapy of chiropractic care with nutrition therapy could offer.
Okay, so let me take it out from my point of view a little broader. So in the chiropractic arena, it's easy to understand how a gait may alter spinal biomechanics. That's kind of a simplistic, mechanistic view. But what if, as example, say someone has a chronic inflammatory process due to excessive carbohydrate intake, excessive insulin that pushes prostaglandin E2, and the body is staying up in this inflamed state. And in that inflamed state, the muscle fascial complex begins to go into an acute phase reactive state all the time, where it's pushing lactic acid, consequently causing an inflamed tendon pulling on a vertebral motor unit. Mm. In an example like that, John, I'm saying that the actual inflammatory cascade may induce a soft tissue action that then causes some type of spinal biomechanic. So we know that, for example, it's well established that muscle tension is a primary cause for migraine and tension headaches, right? So, well, what's causing the muscle tension? Is it a stress response that's inducing this inflammatory cascade as well?
Right.
Is it a chronic microbial infection?
Right.
Is it a nutrient deficiency, say in a B vitamin or magnesium?
Right.
My point is that there are many influences from a nutritional perspective that influence the soft tissue that then will influence the biomechanics.
So this is really a great description, and it sounds to me that you're discussing and describing specific points that can have an effect kind of upstream, right? I mean, you're connecting the dots of an issue and the underlying causative issue. But is that something that you just learn on your own, or are we teaching that in our chiropractic colleges and in continuing education and certification programs? So that's really important insight. Speaking back to, we're bridging nutrition with chiropractic care.
Yeah.
How do we continue to leverage that insight and make sure that our practitioners are more comfortable and more familiar in using it?
It's a good question, and I think the appropriate question, because I was in chiropractic school in the late 70s, early 80s, so it's quite a long time ago, but I've stayed immersed in and connected to the process through not only my lecturing and teaching, but also just out of interest. And the area of education that I believe really should be the model for chiropractic is using a systems biology approach. And in systems biology, but before I go into that, I would say that from a chiropractic perspective, educationally, it is modeled after medical education, which is reductionistic. And it's okay, you study renology, splenology, cardiopulmonary, you study biomechanics and orthopedics, all as separate components, but not as they influence and integrate as a whole, which is what systems biology is. And so therefore, when we start to look at the dynamic interrelation of all these systems, from the neurologic system to the gastrointestinal system to the musculoskeletal system to the endocrine system, and we begin to teach that interrelation, then the function of those systems can be evaluated. And nutrition, it just segues right into that, because our body simply doesn't work properly without proper nutrition, period.
Right.
So you ask about, well, what can we do? I would love to see the chiropractic institutions begin integrating nutrition from a functional clinical perspective from day one, right up and through all 3 or 4 years of education, so that we could begin to look at how these chronic inflammatory conditions, overuse syndromes, nutrient deficient syndromes, influence spinal or joint mechanics.
So bringing that concept alive is something that you and I have spent a lot of time talking about. I think we probably would both agree is the approach is a shift in the paradigm of clinical care from approaching symptomatic care of patients to understanding the underlying cause of the problem that led to a symptom description by a patient. So in other words, a patient can come and present to a practitioner and say, "Doctor, I have back pain." Well, okay, so, you know, if you don't take the systems approach that you just described, then, you know, you get a chiropractic adjustment that's standard and usual, boom. But if you spend, you know, 30 seconds even, you know, 5 minutes talking with a patient, understand, well, how did you feel before you experienced back pain, and try to identify the underlying cause or influence that led to that, then they can treat that plus add traditional chiropractic to more effect.
Yeah, and so in that example, traditional chiropractic is really, and I'm going to get shot with arrows for saying this, it's allopathic. In nature, you come in for pain, you get an adjustment, it treats the pain.
Right.
So if you do not look at causation and the many facets of causation, so if someone's lower cervical is constantly going out, whatever that means, and you just adjust it, you're doing, in my opinion, well, why don't, you're just an expensive aspirin.
Yeah. Right.
Is really what you are. So as opposed to, so have you been working at the computer a little longer? Have you been a little bit more stressed out? Did you overcook yourself on the gym floor lifting weights? Have you been junking out on more carbs lately? And, you know, asking a few lean, you know, pointed questions might start tipping it. But we can go a lot deeper than that.
But we're not really talking about nutrition as something that's so novel into chiropractic care. You know, even in B.J. Palmer's textbook of somewhere around 1927, he actually, maybe not very clearly or explicitly, talks about supporting the underlying systems of the spine and the central nervous system where they need nutrient support to be able to stabilize their responsiveness and their adaptation to chiropractic care.
Right.
So nutrition and chiropractic has been a natural marriage almost from the very beginning.
Yeah.
So it's not a new concept.
No.
It maybe is a new and updated application.
No, it's not a new concept. In fact, I think, unfortunately, one of the areas that a chiropractic as a profession is hung on to is that they are the original holistic health providing medium.
Absolutely. Right.
And that they're the only ones that know nutrition because they get a whole course in it during education, and I go, well, that doesn't really give you the right to, or the knowledge base, really, more importantly, to say you're practicing clinical nutrition. Yes, it's infinitely more than, you know, the mention of vitamin D in allopathic tradition, but we have a long ways to go with that.
Right.
Yeah, and so the other part of this in your question is that we know so much more now. We have more knowledge base to, say, tease apart the fascia and to look at the proteoglycans that are involved and the aminoglycans that are involved in supporting, say, just the fascia between the glucosamines and the...
So I think maybe what is new is really not so much as it's new as it's in a progression and advancement of knowledge about nutrition. So, you know, probably when you and I were both in school, what we learned about nutrition was centered around the concepts of macronutrients or micronutrient deficiency, vitamins and minerals and calories, and that was nutrition for us. But now there's a functional nutrition component that actually describes your model of systems biology or underlying systems of care that actually identifies key nutrients and other natural available ingredients that can affect a system of the body's ability to respond.
Yes.
So that's probably a new application of new science.
It is. The challenge we still face is assessment.
Yeah.
You know, how do we assess nutrients, especially when you take into consideration the concept, thank you, Roger Williams, of bioindividuality. And we know that's a major influence on my physiology versus yours. And so, but there's work enough to suggest that there's a broad sweeping benefit, if you will, to healthy lifestyle and nutrition, as we were saying at the start. But to my point really here, John, is how can we accurately assess your needs on a regular basis? I think that's, and I'll give you a simple example in current lab testing, and that's vitamin D.
Right.
So I just see everyone testing 25-hydroxy vitamin D. Fine, that's great. But what's it really telling us? It tells us how much vitamin D you're transporting in your serum. Does it tell you how you're using it?
Yeah, right.
Is there a step that you could do to kind of assess that?
Right.
Yeah, you could look at calcitriol and 125-dihydroxy D, because that's the more active form. So we could at least take it one step a little further, but we're still not able to say, okay, well, how are you using it? And is that level right for you? And so I don't have an easy answer for that.
So are there, in your own practice, are there simpler tools or surveys that you found pretty effective at least highlighting or identify underlying issues? You know, there are a lot of sort of MSQ or system survey or, 10 others, but what do you use?
Yeah, so thank you. That was a good question. Objectively, I use questionnaires. They've been around. I've used them for close to 35, 40 years already, I'm happy to say. So like the original symptom survey of Royal Lee that was then modified into a health appraisal questionnaire, very reliable for doing just, what are your symptoms and what does that translate to in terms of organ and glandular systems? The medical symptoms questionnaire used on every single patient. It takes 5 minutes to do, and you can track, from an analog perspective at least, change in a viable way. One of my approaches, by the way, that I should share with you is that when patients present to me and they're one big hot mess of all kinds of signs and symptoms, whether it's structural imbalances to gut imbalances to energy imbalances, as a clinician you go, well, where the heck do you start with someone like that? And so what I've learned to do through years is to work on the largest systems first that have the most impact, and then drill deeper as a patient goes through. So my own personal clinical approach is to pretty much take every patient through a 28-day lifestyle change. I call it a detoxification. It is, because we use a real strict elimination diet, educate patients towards the use of organics, have them use medicines and nutrients, not medicines, nutrients as medicines in concentrated forms to support their hepatic pathways for detoxification and also energy. But it's mostly that first introduction is about getting people to start to pay attention to their lifestyle and facilitating that for the month. Once they get that, then we do a gut restoration program. And that usually for me in my clinic is usually about a 3-month process. And between that lifestyle change detoxification and the gut restoration, such a large majority of signs and symptoms and problems mitigate. They just come down. And then it's at that point where I'll do more fine-tuning of testing for looking at different imbalances in different systems.
So for the first-time patient that you would start that therapeutic approach, is it well-received? Or
oh my gosh,
how do you work
yes.
them through some of the struggles in the early days of a lifestyle change or a detox program?
Well, yeah, and that's the question that I get asked all the time. Oh my gosh, I can't get patients to adhere to, a strict elimination diet. It's how we present it. So much of it is how we present it and educating them as to the need, as to why. Right. If someone came in to me just with low back pain and they were 50 pounds overweight and I knew that they were in insulin resistance, but their head was not in any way, shape, or form interested in a major lifestyle change, I work with them.
So you assess them before
totally.
Put them on a plan. Yeah.
Yeah. But mind you, that in my practice, the majority of patients that are coming in because they've heard that they know from a functional perspective, metabolically, of the work I do, not as chiropractic, but just in one thing I do is I introduce functional medicine patients into structural integrity. And the chiropractic structural integrity patients I'll introduce into functional medicine, because of what you were asking and bringing to light, is it is intimately integrated.
Yeah, great. So the this symposium and trade show starts really this afternoon and tonight. Any advanced insights on key topics that you're going to try to learn more about while you're here? And you're also giving a talk, but. Any general topics? You know, there's the issue of pain and inflammation is big these days, and new solutions from lipid mediators to phytocannabinoids to, you know, you name it.
Yeah, but the whole arena of pain and inflammation, pain in particular, is the area that I personally am kind of real excited about exploring deeper. And one of the areas that I'm personally looking at is the imbalances pushed by organ and glandular imbalances that lead to chronic inflammatory and pain processes that express in structural issues like migraine, shoulder pain, low back pain, and that correlation between. So it's being able to say, hey, you can reduce the inflammation from the excessive insulin that you have in your body and the excessive cortisol, your inflammation pain process comes down, your joint pain will abate, yeah.
Fantastic.
And that's an area that
I'm
very excited about.
So thanks, Dr. Bump, for another great discussion in our podcast series. I'd also remind our listeners that we have two or three other podcasts that we've done with you two, and they're always stimulating and really great discussions. So thanks for that.
Thank you, John.
And
always a pleasure.
Thanks to our listeners for joining us to the Holistic Matters podcast, the podcast designed to help you become the you that nature intended, with Dr. Chris Bump. Thanks.
Thank you, John. Good talking.